Welcome to NGA Notable Lectures, a podcast offering a deeper understanding of all things artistic. Jonathan Lyndon Chase, Tim Dowd, and Louis Fortino all engage with themes of race, gender, and sexuality while working in the genre of figurative painting. Yet the artist's idiosyncratic styles also take their paintings beyond categories of identity, challenging normative strategies of representation. In this discussion, recorded October 21, 2018, in conjunction with the special installation Bodies of Work at the National Gallery of Art, Dowd moderates a conversation with Chase and Fortino about painting techniques and the tropes surrounding figurative work, looking particularly into how their methods explore and expand the practice of modern portraiture.
Thank you all for coming out to this afternoon's panel discussion, Painting and Representation. The panel is inspired by the exhibition, which is upstairs, called Bodies of Work, curated by Molly Donovan. So I'm the Tim Dowd part, and I'm super happy to be here with Jonathan Lyndon Chase and Louis Fortino. I also want to thank my other collaborators, my colleague Zoe Charlton, who actually curated this wonderful slideshow, Ed Ingebretson and Andrea Poland, Caitlin Teal Price and Lynn Myers, who are good at keeping me very busy. So for the last 30 years, representations of queerness have been primarily explored in video, we were just talking about this, performance and photography, or in writing. The important examples to me are, to name a few, are Robert Blanchon, who I don't think is very well known, Felix Gonzalez Torres, who's upstairs, and David Bonarovich, who recently had a retrospective at the Whitney Museum. And in my own research and experience, representational painting as a mode of expression was not a medium that artists, queer artists, were using to convey their ideas. The only artist of my generation I could even think of, and we were just talking about this as well, is Hugh Steers. And I don't think he's particularly well known either. All this appears to be changing. And there's a really exciting group of emerging gay and queer artists, and these two are among them. I first saw Louis's work, and I have not told you this, Louis, on Instagram, because a friend who's actually in the audience, my model and collaborator, Rodney Cuillar, loved your work. And then you had a show with my colleague, Zoe. And so I saw your work then. And reviewing the exhibition here, Bodies of Work, I observed that while the identities in the exhibition are broad and intersectional, none of the artwork necessarily pronounced itself as made by gay artists. Like you don't walk in and say gay artists, but there are gay artists in the exhibition, and some of the work signals something. Like I think the Raziel painting, something's going on in that painting that seems a little less than heteronormative. So this is not a criticism. I think it's a powerful and important show because it really expands the way that we look at portraiture. I think it's a pretty incredible show, but this is an observation. So when we walk into a space, we think, what does this show mean for me, a painter who is both concerned with representations of gay bodies and complex gender identities? And what ways are those identities and bodies commodified? I'd like to begin by asking each of you to talk about your work. You both made particular choices about how you paint and how you depict the male body. There are expectations that come with a style, which I think we've talked about them, and a genre. And how does these expectations or your relationship to the style or manner that you work in frame your content?
I can start, I think. So I think firstly, I'm just attracted to a certain kind of painting, and then I learn afterward what that means, like in relationship to my subject matter. But I'm really heavily referencing modernism, like Matisse and Picasso, like some of the first paintings I ever saw as a child or that were sort of shown to me as like painting. And I think it's important that I'm referencing that because it is like inverting something, or like, you know, many paintings of women are of heterosexual desire, and it's an opportunity for me to insert my own experience and say that this is also historical, or this is also part of a canon. I think that's sort of the first most obvious answer for me of like why it functions for me.
I think some people have called your approach kind of a correction.
And it feels weird to reference some of the paintings I do, especially with shifting ideas around gender and desire and like who can be looked at, or who should be and depicted in a certain way. And I think especially for Picasso, who's like such a heavily influence on me, that it is maybe hopefully an opportunity to correct some things or to expand that view. But I'm also really interested in artists like Marcin Hartley, who was a gay man, but wasn't really, I mean, I don't know how he was interpreted it by his contemporaries, but that's not maybe the first thing you think about with his work. Like there was just that show at the Breuer, which was like his main landscapes, which is like,
feels like Maine.
Right. Not the gayest thing in the world, but so I think I'm interested in kind of dragging them out of history or giving them a chance in my own work to be more fully seen or something.
Yeah, because it's there in his work.
Right, definitely. I mean, the bathers, it's very obvious, and the way he draws the male body. I mean, he's really, especially, you know, like the Madawaska Acadian Light and his beefcake thighs. Like, it's kind of amazing. Those are made in the 40s and 50s.
Truly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So a lot of my work has to do with the body's relationship to space. So I'm really kind of interested in sort of highs and lows of energy. And a lot of the sort of references that I kind of are inspired by are photographs and like collage. So I'm really drawn to like Ramir Bearden, Jacob Martens, people who deal with the body in sort of like these flat ways that are directly referencing the photograph and then not so much. And thinking about how a body can be flat and volumetric at the same time in relationship to identity, complex identity. So having something that's like really flat, navigating through like these public spaces and private spaces, and how these spaces affect the body on the surface, and then something kind of past the surface embedded into like the soul or into like feelings and these complex ranges of emotions that I think are often, for the types of bodies and stories that I'm dealing with, often are denied from us as being Black or queer, and like these sort of projections onto the body that I think lenses and the gaze referencing back to photography has a lot to do with the way that I make decisions about sensitivity to touch with flatness. So kind of pushing and pulling back and forth, not sort of getting a sort of like an answer, if you will, but just kind of trying to paint or depict an image that is real and tender and honest, but definitely tries to go against like the grain of what's like the norm or the expectation, like heteronormacy, or what it means to be a man, or what it means to be like masculine.
Right.
Yeah. I think both of our work is about an expansion of how something can be interpreted, or like, like an image of a man or an image of two men, or like it's like there is maybe some of the first work that was being made using that subject matter looked a certain way. And I feel like now we're at an opportunity where we are just expanding the ways of seeing that or representing it, which like we're talking about, I'm trying to just reach farther back into history or something to do that.
Yeah. It's interesting that you mentioned photography because you use photography. You use photography and photography like conceptually frames how I make my bodies of work. So we've all relied on photography. Do you want to talk a little bit about your relationship to photography?
Yeah. So my work has a pretty wide variety of sources. Sometimes it's drawing from life or from my memory or from other painting, and sometimes from photography and specifically gay photographers from history like Bob Meiser or George Plattline. So in the same way that I'm just trying to have a dialogue with gay artists from the past. And for me, I sort of play like a game of telephone with photography, where I'll draw very directly from the photograph, and then I'll make a drawing from the drawing that I've made. And then, so it sort of has an opportunity to become more mine, or more about my memory or my experience, even though I'm using it as a place to kind of jump into the work.
Yeah, that's interesting, because that kind of flattens it in the way that you describe. So when you're talking about flattening, you're talking about flattening in two ways?
Yeah, flattening and sort of like this, a body going into, let's say, a public space, and seeing that space flat like a stage, and seeing this body sort of being kind of energy pressing on against it, or sort of being flat as like a mask or something like on a surface. And then sort of on the opposite side, more intimate space or like a safe space, the flatness is still there, but trying to think about the flatness more embedded inside of the body. So it's more about the inside and the things that you don't get to see in the public spaces, and vice versa, like the outside spaces being more about performance, or like what you show people on the outside.
Right.
Sort of like, also kind of like a gauge of like safety too, I think.
Well, that's really interesting. I think it's interesting to think about photography in that way also, because of how it flattens into kind of the memory.
Yeah, yeah. Like a lot of my paintings go through like kind of like a collage process, and then kind of a drawing. So kind of similar to the way you were just describing.
So there's like a something between you and the photograph.
Right. Well, you have to discover, I think, what is painting, or what is the material contributing to this subject matter that it couldn't have done as a photograph.
Right.
And I think that's, and you really have to contend with that as a painter nowadays.
I think so. And otherwise it really needs to be about the photographic process then.
Right.
Like, why is it a photograph? If you don't want to have that conversation, then you make a space.
And I think something I'm particularly interested in photography is, I feel like generally people will think about it as truth, or like a true way of experiencing the world, when the more you research it and the more you make images yourself, you realize it's like such a narrow, and I mean, really beautiful and
Someone on this stage said a few weeks ago that that's the gift to photography. This built-in idea that it's true,
yeah. But it's so not
I think
painting is still so important, because it offers a space to be like, actually, there's thousands of other realities that you can talk about that don't need photography.
Right.
Yeah. The excitement of potential, you know, and like fluidness, and it's just like more open and expansive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely like a more magical one that way, I think, you know, closer to life.
And I think like experiencing a body or being in a body doesn't always look exactly the way a body looks. And then the photograph kind of generally is limited to look like what it looks like. And so I think I often end up stylizing bodies in certain ways to try to talk about like, how did it feel to have my arm around that person? Or how did it feel to like sort of be like cramped in that space? Or what did I look like? And I feel like that's sort of where painting really shines, because it's not bound by light or
time.
Anything.
Time.
Yeah.
It's not 1 second.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really interesting. So I don't know if you guys saw this article that was in Hyperallergic recently. Kerry James Marshall wrote about Bill Traylor, which is actually, the work is in this space right now. And in his article, Kerry James Marshall discusses the power of representation and the hostility of indifference in his essay about Bill Traylor. Though he's specifically talking about outsider artists, access, and race, and it specifically he's talking about Black artists that are collected by a white collecting class, it's no stretch to apply his argument to many identities, including all of us, intersectionality and all. And this is, I'm paraphrasing here, this is what he wrote. Nothing changes the perception of a person within his, her, their community, or the perception of themselves, more than the unsolicited attention of folks who had previously been indifferent, if not hostile, to their existence. So you can be framed as a Black artist, you can be framed as a gay artist, you can be framed as a woman artist, you can be framed as a regional artist. How does the idea of this kind of framing impact your relationship to your work? And I have a couple of follow-ups, but I'll start there.
I think when I think about the body space relationships and how there's so many, just like as complex these identities are, like Black identity, queer identity, that we're all like multifaceted. We take on different roles and we're like, I think, more than one person, sometime frozen and at different times. And I think thinking about how the body just like really carries like memory, you know, and like that sort of can be really traumatic or really empowering at the same time, to sort of go against like the norm or the sort of standard. And in my paintings, I try to have lots of sort of things kind of going on and floating at the same time. And among those things, like high and low, positive and negative, like kind of like energies and like these projections.
High and low meaning what?
High and low is like a joy or sorrow, like violence or safety. And to carry these sort of expectations that you're not even aware of sometime, right, entering the space.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, can really imprint on the body, and like you can carry that with you, and that sort of people are trying to force that to be a part of your identity or what defines you. Mm. And
you're saying it's imprinted and you carry it kind of not knowing that you're carrying it?
I think sometime, like when you get to like a certain state of like coming into who you are as like a person, whether, you know, like Black, queer, what have you, there's this moment where like you're kind of conscious of like these things, these expectations of you.
Right. And it's like, is this me or is this what people want from me?
Thus it can be, I think, very, you know, traumatic.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think sort of...
Am I assigned to this kind of...
Yeah. It's like, oh, like you're a boy. And it's like, I never said I was a boy. I never said I was a girl. Like these sort of like labels that are on you. And they're really rigid and they often don't allow you to move.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think my way, or like the experience I've had in my kind of young career of being sort of not pigeonholed, but like what Terrence referenced when I was talking about, you know, work, the work being called intimate, the world, which is what it is. Like, but I also feel that it can be more things. Like you're saying, people contain, you know, many different characters and experience many different things.
Absolutely.
And I feel like we're at a particular moment in queer history where it's becoming more public, it's becoming more mainstream, more possible for a 25-year-old painter to paint that, and it's fine.
And it's remarkable, right?
Yeah, yeah. Which is a good thing, but yeah. I think for the public to process it, it also has to become very compartmentalized. And so it's like, now gay people do yoga and they like have a really beautiful domestic spaces. And I feel like sometimes my work can be viewed as a product of that. And that can be really scary to me, because it's like ultimately about being human, not about being, you know, this sort of easy to digest, colorful,
right,
comfortable version of queerness. Or
right.
Queer identity.
And I think you used queer very appropriately there, because so when is it queer and when is a gay identity meant to be maybe a little normative?
Right.
Heteronormative. And I think both of you make points in your work that you're not really that interested in the normative, if you both want to talk about that a little bit, because it's very clear, even in these images that are circulating, that that's not the argument that either of you are making.
Right. And I think that's what I'm talking about. It's like, this isn't about normalization.
Nope.
Or
your work does say that beyond the... I think it's tricky... To the intimate versus domestic, but I don't mean internal.
No, no worries. I mean, this is these are things that I'm figuring out in real time too. So I don't know that I have any resolved answers for it necessarily, but I think.
When you have three figures in a painting, you're making a point.
Yeah. And it's also about trying to be so specific about my experience that it's at the same time accessible to everyone, but still only something I know. So it's not about normalization or about saying this is the, you know, lowest common denominator of what we like, or it's more about being confronted with a very human moment or feeling,
right,
and
yeah,
saying, I know that, but also I don't, or something like that. Or that it's just more complicated than...
Yeah.
Yeah. And being queer is a lot more complicated than that. Than like,
absolutely,
now it's, mm-hmm, now it's okay. Now it's part of the Clinton campaign. Now it's, you know.
I think that would be gay.
Yeah.
I think, like, as you're, you know, you're talking, describing about this sort of, like, again, like, this exploitation of, like, sort of, like, gayness and queerness, and how, like, queerness, for many people, and I think including myself and maybe you being more sort of vast or more accessible for, like, freedom, and gay being sort of more something heteronormative or, like, more conventional. And I think that I'm really also interested in the similarities and the differences, you know, between the two, but that, you know, thinking of, like, time and, like, just change and fluidness, just being able to, like, freely and safely on one's own, you know, will be able to navigate those things. Like, you know, I think change is really important and vital for just, like, health and life and for, you know, just being, like, a human, you know. And I think the rigidness and the projections and the cages, you know, totally do the opposite. You know, these expectations, right, like, lock us in. And I think, you know, painting, you know, just even as a medium, like, allows for there to be just, like, so many changes.
Right, and something that's expected to change and always will.
Yeah, and it's not as frozen, you know. Yeah, like, frozen, you know, it's like a... It's like dead, and, you know, it doesn't change. And that's, you know, not so great, right?
Yeah. So do you... I'm going to follow up on this a little bit, because I'm talking about the idea, and I want to talk about your identity, and how, or if, because I'm not making a presumption this is true, that your identity shifts the way people see your work.
How do you mean exactly? Like,
I just asked you a completely cute, confusing question. So I said, I just read it. How does your identity shift the way people look at your work, which is an extension of the other question, or does it?
I think my identity is the very first way people experience my work. So it's almost everything. But then I think the last thing you experience it has nothing to do with it. So it's almost like it doesn't really shift it is the way I think people experience my work, that it's, you know, a young gay man making images of his young gay life. You know,
right.
But then I hope that what we're talking about earlier, that it's, you know, it's not about normalization. It's not about creating a kind of pre-digested image of what that life is like, that actually it's something people could relate to regardless of that identity or regardless of their identity.
I don't think changes for me after. I think, like, you enter in and they're, for me, like, very much about me, memories, close relationships, my experiences being Black, queer, fat bodied, bipolar, all of those things. And I think, you know, entering into the work, those things start off with me. You know, it's like a micro and a macro, and then, like, they expand
right
out so other people can enter in at different levels to be like, okay, like, yeah, you know, like, I can relate to, like, these really, you know, complex things. But I don't think, yeah, I think it's...
Well, it's an interesting thing that I think for the viewer and for the creator, it's almost the opposite, where my identity has nothing to do with making. But then once it's seen in public, it's everything. That is everything. I don't know if you feel that way too, or, like, because it is you, it's not something that you've constructed. It's like, this is what I'm living and experiencing.
Yeah.
So it's not like I feel like I choose, like, oh, this moment's particularly illustrative of my identity in this country. It's just something that has happened to me. And then it becomes...
Just like parts.
Right.
Yeah. Parts of, like, a whole. Yeah.
Back to the question about style. Do you think the way that your work reads stylistically is something... I know you play with that. Do you want to talk about that?
Stylistically, I think each, like, thinking again about time and how each moment is really specific and how each, you know, feeling is, like, really complex and sort of, like, painting has a lot to do about time, but then, you know, it doesn't move in sort of the same way as, like, you know, film or animation or something.
But you also heavily code your work,
mm-hmm,
and you're not really talking about that.
I think the coding's with, like, sort of watches or, like, flowers or, like, orifices and pleasure points and things like that, are ways to sort of, like, talk about things that are from me at a certain point and then expanding out into things that other people, you know, these symbols are across time, like always like in flux and changing in different ways. I try to like paint, I think that the way like my mark is, like I try to touch a lot of like emotion and feel to touch with it. And I think that there's something really accessible about it that I That's really enjoy.
So you think of that as kind of a tool.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's liberating for me, and it's like a tool. Yeah,
right.
Because think the about expectation accessibility of it, as a tool.
Well, expression. Because I mean, that's really interesting for you to say, and I have to say that's why I'm really interested in the both of your relationship to expression, because I feel like you're using it.
Right.
It's not something that you're using it necessarily for expressive reasons, but because of it operates as expression, and one can work within that space. Does that make sense?
I'm interested in this idea of accessibility too. Like, yeah. I think most people think when they think about artwork, they like, I'm not talking about necessarily this group of people, but like everyone think about expressionism. They think about feeling. And so it is a tool for Absolutely. Accessibility.
Right. And that's what you're saying too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I just had to work through it myself.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you for saying that, because I needed to work through it too. Do you want to say a little bit more? When we're talking about coding?
Coding, I think a lot about safety and danger. Again, there's like a really large part of like my work like reoccurring. Kind of am holding some things back with a code, and it not being so clear kind of reinforces this something that's like strange or uncanny or different or ambiguous, and sort of being able to be like okay with that and to not be hostile about that. So I think a lot about this like a code, kind of being able to do that next to something that's more kind of direct or accessible. Like something way more vast and fluid, and then having things that are opposite to each other, hot and cold, loud and quiet, being up. Maybe, you know, in the same way, something more coded or secretive on the surface, not being so accessible, kind of reinforcing different zones of the painting to inform each other. And I hope that, you know, sort of like these things being part of different cultures, like queer culture, Black culture, and like there's this flux between stereotype and then something that's really rich and tender, you know? And then just being able to be unique and different, and ambiguity of a code to not be something like, oh, that's different, so to be hostile towards it.
Right.
That's interesting you say it that way, because you love working in these kind of opposite modes. And it also, certain things you use are very fast. Like, you know, I think the Nike swoosh is always humorous, and I love it. But then other parts of your coding is very slow.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about Nike for a second. You know, like, I think, like, as far as Nike, it's, like, such a large part of, like, American culture, I think African-American culture, urban culture, and then also as sort of, like, a costume entering into, like, a public space, right? I kind of think of it as, like, an indicator of, like, boyness or masculinity in certain ways. And, like, that's, like, the sort of, like, one read that, like, I intended for, but it also takes
some interesting.
Yeah, different kind of things to different people. Like, for someone, like, something as simple as, like, a Nike symbol being, like, really, really kind of dangerous or loaded with a stereotype.
Yeah.
Or something, you know.
Or manipulative. I mean, we talked about your neighborhood, and, you know, that's a neighborhood that could be a candidate for Nike to go in and, like, put their swoosh. And
Yeah, I think also, too, this is a reflection of people's interests outside of, you know, it being sort of, like, I think at times like a camouflaging technique for some people, especially like when you think of like things like passing and like entering like a space that's, you know, maybe, you know, like not as friendly towards like non-binary or queer like gay identities. It's kind of like the first visual indicator. It's like, okay, like this person is similar to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ways. I recognize something here.
Yeah.
I like this idea around the passing.
Yeah, I think the passing is really, really something that, you know, race, sexuality, gender, all those things have like crisscross over, and like the ways of which we mentioned earlier, like how these things are in, like kind of like imprinted on us, it can stay in really challenging ways to make us go against that grain.
But it's even more complicated, more confusing, because I think that it's also changing now, like what is passing or what is acceptable. And I think about that a lot in relationship mm-hmm. to my work, because on the one hand, I'm thrilled when I feel like it's reaching people that I'm surprised by, but then it also makes me like, well, what tools am I using to pass in a certain way or to make this believable for someone? I feel like I'm kind of caught between two extremes of like distinguishing yourself and versus humanizing yourself. And I have no answer for that. And I feel like it's, I don't know.
I think we probably all had the experience of representing something we didn't know we were representing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So like I did a series of paintings of burlesque people and everyone thought they were men, but they were actually women. That was kind of awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, that's slippery. So I want to talk to you guys about influence. And so we are all in conversation with artists, many of the same artists. And sometimes I think we're forced to be in conversations with artists because we kind of struggle with them. One of those people for me has been Philip Perlstein, because I kind of hated his work. Sorry, Philip. Then I struggled with it and I kept thinking about it. And he's really a conceptual painter at the end of the day. He doesn't give you what you expect from these paintings, which mm-hmm. we are all probably interested in. And that for me is the kind of payoff with not understanding someone, but they kind of nag you.
Right.
And as I'm an emerging artist, I really thought about Kerry James Marshall and his broad relationship to painting, or Barclay Hendricks. And then we all navigate giants. I mean, you're navigating Picasso.
Yeah, just start at the top.
Yeah, just start at the top. And for me, it was Toulouse-Lautrec because of his relationship to the people around him, and Lucian Freud. I really had to kind of figure out, okay, better tackle that one. And I think probably for all of us, we've considered Max Beckmann, which is interesting. I also considered contemporary artists that emerged when around the time that I finished grad school, like Lisa Yuskavage and John Kern and Elizabeth Payton, because I felt like I had to understand what they were doing. While I was in your studios, you guys shared artists that influenced your work or who you were interested in. And I loved that you talked about some of the same people, Alice Neal, David Hockney, Jared French was more particular to you, and Paul Cadmus, Francis Bacon, you both mentioned. And many of them are outliers, which is pretty interesting. They were people who actually engaged a male body or a gay body. And they were very interested in the kind of daily lives of the people whose bodies were fetishized. So the most obvious connection between all of us is identity and sexuality. Which contemporary artist, and you don't have to keep it to contemporary, you can broaden into artists that are not contemporary, but I am curious who out there is speaking to you or who is irritating you?
Yeah, I'm going to let you start.
You're irritated by photographers.
Yeah.
I was just talking about this with you. We were looking at the show upstairs. Frustrated with like Picasso, but then I also like really admire and I love certain aspects of what he does, but it's like kind of like it's a push and a pull.
He's tricky.
Yeah. Very, very tricky.
Yeah.
Really impactful. But I think thinking of, you know, the stylistic decisions and his like overall contribution to this like image making and painting, but then just sort of how he comes to these images or how he used to rather is kind of problematic for me in some ways, like, you know, African mask and like the way he's depicting ideas of beauty and, you know, things like that have been always, you know, not set well with me.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
But like you're talking about correction or something, I think it gives you an opportunity to have both conversations, say like formally something's happening here and socially, and now I'm going to talk about both of them, or I don't know if that makes sense. But
yeah.
Oh, yeah, I think it makes sense. Yeah.
I think like we were talking earlier, Bacon is someone who comes from another kind of like emotional extreme where it's like destructive, it's about violence. And I feel like my work very rarely talks about that, or like, I don't feel like I have the language to talk about that, but he does come up in conversation with people. So he's someone who for me is one of these kind of curious figures that I don't feel like I look to necessarily, but somehow got into my genetics in some way. But yeah, I also think that about photography that we were talking about earlier, where as a painter, I feel like I have a really wide vocabulary to talk about painting, and the like I can comfortably say what I'm attracted to or what I don't think functions in a painting, but I don't feel that way about photography, even though I use it so heavily. So I should name some photographers to answer your question.
Plat lines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But contemporary ones, I don't, like, yeah, I don't know. Like Nan Golden, I think, is someone who I feel really related to, actually, even though our work doesn't look anything like each other's, or I also don't know what makes a great Nan Golden or a bad Nan Golden, but I love her work so much because of its immediacy and its sort of honesty, and it can be almost brutal how close they are to the subject matter, and I feel like it's something I want out of my own work too.
I mean, your relationship to Picasso is interesting to me, because I thought a lot about Degas and all those bathers who were never bathing.
Right.
It was like they weren't even near anything that would have anything to do with bathing. And they were, they're like an excuse to paint a naked lady, clearly.
Right.
You know, so extending that is an interesting choice. Yeah.
What do you mean by extending it?
Well, like you're deciding to put, like, I actually referenced a body of work. And I thought, well, I'm just going to make paintings of men who are just lounging around.
Right.
You know, like with their foot on some photo or phone books. Or
right.
Whatever, you know, like there's actually no point for them to be sitting there. And I really liked the idea of the pointless male nude.
Which hasn't existed until
right.
now.
Yeah. So like, and that for me, it was riffing on Degas. So
yeah.
Like I was interested in using references that were kind of, the series I'm talking about was called Honcho Degas. So half of the series was referencing Honcho and the other was Degas.
Okay.
And I just mixed them all up. And then when you see them, you're like, really, sometimes you can't even tell the difference.
Right.
The difference. But you guys, neither of you mentioned a contemporary artist.
That's true.
These guys are going to turn on you.
Yeah.
They want to know who else to look at.
I really love John Edmonds, and I'm really digging Dana Watson right now.
Who?
Dana Watson.
She is a photographer.
Yes.
Yeah. Amazing photographer.
Oh, like stunning.
Yeah.
Lots of interior scenes, like the body. It's sort of like classical, but then like really, really contemporary, where she's capturing like these people and just like their mundane, safe spaces, like lots of like bedrooms, dining rooms, stuff like that, which I'm always a fan of because I paint them in my work. But those are two that I'm like really interested in right now. Photography.
But maybe not necessarily frustrated by, which was sort of also who we were trying to think of.
Yeah, I'm trying to find out who kind of gets on your nerves.
Right. For me, maybe it's also like Dana Schutz is someone that comes up a lot.
That's
with
a
my
good
work.
One. That's a good one. You want to talk about that?
We can. and someone who was an early example of like, just playing with painting, and I just could see as a high school student that she was really enjoying making those. So it was a really big influence on me.
Right.
But I don't feel like I feel like I have a stronger relationship to Nicole Eisenman. But she doesn't come up as much. So she,
no.
And that is
those are harder to read.
Yeah.
And in this context, that in terms of around queerness.
Right.
Yeah.
So I feel a lot more connected to her in a lot of ways, but I feel like the conversation. Sometimes, I mean, she's come up a lot with my work to the point where I'm like, okay, like, maybe not.
Dana Schutz?
Yeah, yeah. Which I don't know if it's like the color or the materiality or something like that, but she's someone who nags.
Well, in terms of efficacy, I think that you're right on target, like with your content.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyone else who you really need? You can talk about anyone. You're just nice.
I really do respond in like this really mixed way with Gehede Whiteley's work.
And
the way
let's
which,
talk about that.
Yeah. he's always been kind of someone who's been like kind of floating around in like my studio and having like this sort of like really like loud like voice in my ear where he paints like black power, like black people in like these positions of power. And there's something that's really, really like incredible about that, but then there's something like, you know, deeper than that I feel like I can't get through the surface of it. And I feel like that's where it's like kind of like really complicated for me.
I think it's a really interesting thing to say, because I think when you walk into a museum and you see a Wiley painting, you think, that's really important that that's here.
Yeah.
And then you think about how it's made and you're like,
Yeah. Yeah. Like,
I mean, of course he has a lot of people making them, so maybe that's, you know, answers that question.
Yeah, like different artists, you know, of course have different modes and ways of, like, you know, they produce their work.
Right.
But I think also just, you
know. But you want to touch yours. And
yeah, I feel like I definitely, like, I'm such a control freak. And, like, it's like, I just, like, I couldn't imagine, you know.
Your,
like,
control freak will not allow you to have someone.
No. But I think, you know, because I kind of, in this really tense way, consider him a part of, like, my genealogy. Like, following, like, you know, like, someone like Barclay Hendricks and, like, people who, like, deal with, like, sort of, like, classical kind of portraiture and, like, this sort of way. Carey, James Marshall is definitely, I feel like we're all kind of, like, getting at something in different and relative levels.
Right.
Heteronormacy maybe not so much in certain ways. And then, you know, like, for me, like, queerness. And I think with Kehinde's there, yeah, there's something about them that I can't quite, that I'm frustrated about, like, the accessibility past sort of, like, the power that, or the regalness that the figures have.
Yeah,
which is, like, really,
it's a very
important,
different conversation around photography than the other conversation we had around photography. I mean, it's so in his work. Yeah.
But demeanor, I think. Like, I don't know him, but, like, I feel like you guys are maybe after a similar thing, but you approach it from the other side, which is, like,
yeah,
quiet or about, like, a very personal, very known thing. And that's really not.
But you know what's interesting when you say that? I think Wiley's work's quieter about its queerness or gayness,
right,
than Jonathan's.
Right, because it's, right, not as close, I think, to maybe his lived experience as yours is. So even though there may be quiet moments, like bedroom moments, they are very loud about, like, the reality of the situation.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
This has been a National Gallery of Art podcast.